welcome to The International View on TalkZone.com, the show that discusses the positive and negative things affecting our world. Now, here's your host, Fanta Cromock.
Welcome, good listeners in Radio Land. Welcome to the International View Talk Show on TalkZone.com. I am your host, Fanta Cromock. Our topic for today's discussion is understanding the work of Movement for Education First, Country Second, Liberia Initiative for Less Fortunate Children Foundation Incorporated. Joining me to discuss this great topic is our special guest, Mr. Robert D. Gagwa Jr., co-founder and CEO of Me1C2 Lakeful Foundation Incorporated. Mr. Robert Gagwa Jr. is originally from the Republic of Liberia, West Africa. Robert currently resides in the state of Georgia, Atlanta, USA, a place he calls home away from home. Robert holds an associate degree in culinary arts, Atlanta Technical College, and Bachelor of Business Management, Strayer University, Atlanta. Robert is best described as a young visionary leader, a humanitarian, a social activist, but most importantly, a humble servant with so much passion to make a difference, particularly in education. He loves God, the strength of his life, and keeps his family close. Welcome, Robert, to the International View. I am very glad to have you on our show today.
Thanks, Fanta. Thanks so much for the invitation, and I'm honored to be on your show.
Okay. Not wasting most of our time, we would just love to go into our topic, and we will be allowing you to take the mic and tell us about your foundation.
Well, again, I appreciate the invitation you extended, and it's great to be on your show to discuss our work. I hate to say mine because it's not an independent venture or mission. It's a collective effort that comes with my co-founder, Mrs. Deputy Howard, who resides in Nigeria. She oversees our projects back home in Africa. It also comes with our unwavering supporters. These are people who go beyond and above to ensure that we are giving the support necessary to foster our goals and objectives. And so I'd like to say the Movement for Education First, Country Second, Liberia Initiative for Less Fortunate Children, came about back in 2009. There has always been interest in giving back, especially as Liberian. And just for the benefit of your listeners who are not aware of, Liberia is a country in West Africa. We have been through a lot. We endured 14 plus years of slave scribes, and that left a huge destruction on us. Our infrastructure was damaged. We lost over 250,000 Liberians, innocent lives. May their soul rest in perfect peace. But what actually happened that was even more devastating is the fact that our educational system was completely destroyed. Completely destroyed. I cannot overemphasize that. And so a few Liberians came together, and we decided to give back. When you have a country going through such a long civil war, and where literally everything is wiped away, a government, a single government alone cannot solve all of the problems. And so it is incumbent upon us as Liberian citizens to acknowledge our due diligence, and so that's what we did. So we went back home, and we decided not to impose our suggestions based on what we thought was necessary to be done. We decided to go back home and speak to our brothers and sisters who were a little bit more or less fortunate than we are. And so that's what we did. We went back home and we did a preliminary. We visited parents, mostly in poor communities in Monrovia and outside of Monrovia. And we visited communities. We spoke with young girls and young boys. And our question to them was simple. How can we help? And I know the needs are many, but specifically, what do you want us to do? And after the preliminary, we concluded that most of the parents who are poor people needed their kids to get the education that they did not have the opportunity to acquire. And so they said to us, help us send our kids to school. For those of your listeners who are not aware, unlike the United States of America, we pay for school from pre-K through secondary and post-secondary education in Africa. And so basically, if you don't have it, then you don't get the education. You either have money to send your kids to some of the great schools and acquire some of the great education in Africa, or you just don't have it. And so we settled with a community called the Rock Hill Community. And in that community, kids crush rock as young as 5, 4, 6, 7 years old. They crush rock for a living. Then their parents will go down to the rock hill, and instead of using machines to crush those rocks, parents and kids were using their hands, and literally getting hurt in the process of crushing rock just to, get a daily meal. And so we saw that totally unacceptable, and we started paying that tuition and sending back to school. So any wants to live a foundation, our goals and objectives centered around is showing that every young girl and young boy back home in Liberia and eventually across Africa who desires some form of development educationally gets that. I don't believe that a child should be deprived his or her education because of where they was born. I don't believe a child should be deprived his or her education because of their last name, or because of the family class in which they were born. I believe every child is a human right. Every child deserves some form of education in a country like Liberia where you have a staggering illiteracy rate, close to about 75%, and mostly of the youth in Liberia who are uneducated, it's essential that we ensure that every kid gets the educational opportunity that they need. So we have been doing that since 2005, and that's what our organization is about.
Okay, thank you very much, Robert. That's very good, and we pray that you guys have the support needed as possible. My next question would be, since your foundation was founded in 2005, what are some of your achievements?
Well, point of correction, not 2005, I meant 2010. We've been operating since for 4 years now. So since our inception in 2010, that's what we have been doing. But relative to our achievement, which is your next question, I think we have achieved a lot. We have achieved a lot. You know, in retrospect, looking at the situation that we encountered when we first visited Liberia after so many years away, and now I think we've achieved a lot. But I will also caution you that there are a lot more that needs to be done, a whole lot more that needs to be done. We are a grassroots organization, so obviously, you know, it's so difficult to do so much with so little. But you know, like the saying goes, I don't want to say it wrong, but little is much when God is in it. And that has been our philosophy. We have been able to do so much with what we have received. But I think we have achieved a lot. And I would just state a few things we have achieved. Transformation. I believe, and I've said over and over, that after 14 years of civil war, Liberia as a country, as Africa's oldest country, a state, needs a transformation. And regardless of how you define transformation, I believe, though, that transformation has to begin with education.
Yeah.
In order for us to prosper, to flourish the way we desire, we must build the human capacity needed to do so. When you look at Liberia today, before Ebola happened, we had businesses, influx of businesses into the country. And one of the things that I noticed over the past 4 years, I've constantly been in Liberia every year. One of the things that I noticed was the fact that when those businesses coming into Liberia, Liberians found it so difficult to get a job. And so what was happening is, as those businesses imported, they also imported their employees. You had Nigerians working in top offices in Liberia, while Liberians worked the security guard, the drivers. You had people bringing in chefs from different professional fields into the country because we lacked that. And so I believe we must build our human capacity. And I think the way you start doing that is through education. So what we started doing is transforming lives. Since 2010, we have been able to transform the lives of future leaders by enabling them the opportunity to advance themselves, or develop academically. And we've done that. We've given hope. And the way we've given hope, we have been able to, give hope to many underprivileged Liberian children by basically telling them that there is a better path to life than being limited to crushing rocks. Today, we run a scholarship drive for over 100 kids. And let me just be very, very clear, based on the support that we've gotten over the years, we could have had over 400 children on a scholarship. But you can only do that when your goal or your priority is to just send kids to school and not ensure that they are being schooled in an environment that is conducive. And what I mean by that is you send a child to school without equipping that child with the utensil needed to succeed, then you're wasting your time. And so what we have done, we have tried our best to limit our scholarship recipient in as much as we receive thousands of applications every single year. And I've not just our team, but I have been a part of that process as well. But we just can't afford to assist everyone because of how, our financial restraints. But we have been able to send at least a little over 100 kids to school, and all of our scholarship recipients today are equipped with the tools necessary every single year to ensure academic success. We ship school utensils back home, books, pens, backpacks, and you just need them every year for all of our scholarship recipients. I would be remiss if I didn't inform you and your audience that all of those kids were once rock crushers. And today they are now productive students with promising futures. I remember back in 2010 when I first visited the Rock Hill community, we met this young girl by the name of Princess Yami. And she has been, since then, she has been one of our brightest students, very amazing, smart girl who wants to become a doctor. But when we met her, she was crushing rock. And when she saw us, she came to actually cell rosters. And then we started interacting, and that day when she went back home, her parents with her, they disciplined her because she, instead of selling rocks as she was sent to do, she had a conversation with us, and unfortunately we didn't purchase her rock. But today she has become one of our brightest students, and through her brilliancy, her academic performance in school, she has been able to gravitize the interest of so many top officials in Liberia, and she has been offered so many scholarships. And because of the opportunity that we give her, others in her community has been able to benefit from that as well. And today she wants to become a doctor. We have seen her progress on a yearly basis, and I think that's how you define transformation, when you take a person, a young lady with so much future ahead of her, who future once looked so dark, and give her a different path in life. I mean, it just feels so good. So that's just number two. Number three, we last year we launched a conference called Girls Leading Our World Conference, and we believe that education is beyond the classroom. As you know, in school, there are curriculum. There are specific things that we learn in school. And most of our young women today, some of them don't have parents. Some of them have single parents. And because it is so difficult and the lack of the opportunity, some of these kids' parents just don't have the time to invest in education outside of school. And so they don't get the opportunity to learn some of those issues pertaining to them, especially our young girls. And so we were able to launch this last year, the Girls Leading Our World Conference. And what this conference was meant is to address women-related issues that are not taught in schools. We hosted about 40 young ladies from 10 junior high schools in Liberia, and we were able to encourage some of our professionals from both the United States and those of our friends who got their education in the U.S. and went back home to give back and help in the rebuilding process. They came and spoke on different areas, fields, and topics included leadership. We taught our young girls how to be great leaders. In Liberia today, and that's a part of us changing our approach, our mindset. In Liberia today, a mother of four children, two boys, two girls, and I think you can attest to it, is more than likely to send her two boys to school, and I'll go further, to some of the best schools than her girls. Under the pretense that her girl child has to look beautiful, her girl child has to be a great cook, her girl child has to be domestically inclined, because there's a man who's going to come and ask for hands in marriage. And so what this conference taught our young women was that you can be great mothers. You can be great mothers. You can be great wives. But you can also be great nurses. You can also be great doctors. You can also be great ministers. You can also be the next great president of Liberia. And so we have been able to broaden the horizon of our young women from the mindset that you are limited to being wise for our boys. You are limited to being mothers for our kids. You can also be great things and still take your rightful place as women in our society.
Okay.
They also included self-esteem, moral values, how to handle peer pressure, career development, girls' sexuality and prevention methods against early and unwanted pregnancy, STD, transmitted diseases, female hygiene, et cetera. And one last thing that we have been able to achieve, like I said, we have achieved a lot. One last thing that I think is important that I make mention of this, in our efforts to create a conducive learning environment, we were able to acquire the land back in 2012. And we did a groundbreaking, launching of that land with Representative Snow in 2012. And right now in Liberia, we don't have library. In Monrovia, we don't have library. Kids don't have access to a library. So what happens is when you When teachers give homework, those kids return to school with those homework undone. And parents cannot assist their kids to do homework because they themselves are illiterate. And so we've encouraged adult education just as much as we've encouraged technical education. But it's important that we show that we have libraries, state-of-the-art libraries, where our kids can have access to books necessary to enhance the learning process in school. And so our long-term goal is to ensure that we built what we call a community resource center back home. We were supposed to begin construction in 2012. Unfortunately, after we did the luncheon, we were encountered with the land dispute in Liberia. We had someone came and said, well, this is our land. The other person who negotiated the land with us said, this is our land. And we just went through those battles. And since then, we've been negotiating with the leadership in that community to show that we built our first library, a resource center in that community, but to no avail. So we're actually looking elsewhere. One last point that I want to make before I let you talk is that through our scholarship, and I think this is very important, teachers have been able to be paid on time. In Liberia today, and I was a child when I went to school in Liberia, when my tuition was not paid, I was sent home doing tests, and I don't know if you can attest to it. I was sent home. If your mother and your father did not pay your tuition during exams, they put you out of school. Today,
that's
most of our young girls and young boys have been put out of school because of the lack of exam fees, because of the lack of tuition fees. To our scholarship, they don't have to go through that because we want to make sure that our kids are in school and stay in school. And we want to also make sure that our teachers are satisfied. They themselves have families. And so through our scholarship and the support from our generous supporters, our teachers have been able to pay on time. So those are just a few things, significant things that we have been able to achieve thus far.
Thanks, Robert. Those are very good achievements. I would say thank you for the hard work and you people continue to do in Liberia. With that being said, we're going to take a break and we will be right back with more discussion on the International View.
You're listening to the International View on TalkZone.com. Here's Fanta Croma.
Welcome back, beautiful listeners. You are listening to the International View on TalkZone.com. We are discussing understanding the work of Me1C2 Leo Folk Foundation Incorporated. Before our break, we're discussing achievements so far, and that was great points you brought out, great achievements. I would like to know, and I know my listening audience would like to know also, how do you get funding, and what are your struggles when it comes to funding?
Well, you know, that's a great question. Look, I must say that we have been tremendously blessed by great supporters. Look, it's never easy to get funding. And even in the great United States, where there are funds put aside for good work, but it's never easy to get funding. But like I said earlier, we have been tremendously blessed with Liberians. There are people who say Liberians does not support, but I don't believe that. I come as a witness to attesting to the fact that there are great Liberians in these United States who support good work.
And that's good.
And so far, since 2014, since 2010, most of our big donors, not surprisingly, have come from Liberians. Liberians entrepreneurs, Liberians, young Liberians professionals in the U.S. Who love their country and wants to make an impact, especially in areas such as education. We've also reached out to our American Friends of Liberia, American partners. They have also come in. Every year, before we got our 501c3, and started writing grants and whatnot, we have our annual fundraiser gala every year. And over the past 4 years, we just actually had one June 21st of this year. And our gala has been very, very successful. We've been able to raise at least a little over $20,000. But the struggle, though, is that people would come sometimes and make pledges, and it's a little difficult getting those pledges from some people. But for the most part, those who have genuinely made pledges and understand that it is based on those pledges that we make our budget and we achieve our goals and objectives. Because the fact of the matter is, without funding, there's no way possible we can do what we can do.
That's true.
For 4 years now, me and my team, my partner, Mistress Howard, we visited Liberia. We don't reside in Liberia, but we visited Liberia, and we've been able to pay our own way to Liberia. Because if from the U.S. to Liberia is about $1,900, if I'm going to take $1,900 from the money that was given to us to send kids to school and invest in education in Liberia to pay my way, and then to accommodate me while I'm in Liberia for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or so, it run me close to about $4,000. Then I'm spending close to $6,000 already. If I'm going to do that from the confidence of the foundation, then I might as well still stay in the U.S. and let more kids go to school. So we've sacrificed personally every year to ensure that whatever we receive from donors are spent accordingly for the purpose given. And so every year we are back home showing that all of our kids are in school, and showing that those schools that they attend are equipped, and showing that the environment in which they learn are conducive and meet the criteria for academic achievement. And so our struggle has been collecting those pledges. And even though it has been slow, but it's usually short. And sometimes we might raise about $20,000, and at the end of the year we might collect about $14,000 or so. But God has been good. Even with everything, we have been able to achieve so much with the little that we have. So to answer your question, in essence, funding comes from great people, great Liberians in our society, business folks, and from our guests. We are currently in the process of writing grants, and it is our hope that as time goes by, we will get the kind of grants that we need to build the kind of resource centers and the kind of schools and equip the kind of schools that our kids need to go to.
Yes. So if somebody wants to donate, where can they go? How can they donate to your foundation?
Well, if anyone wants to donate, and that would be so helpful. I know we're going to get to Ebola, but if anyone wants to donate, they can visit our website. It's www.me1c2lilfocfund.org. And just go to donate and follow the procedures, and they will tell you know exactly how you can make a pledge and whatnot.
Okay. My next question would be: is your foundation working along with the Ministry of Education of Liberia?
We are working with the appropriate government agency back home, and in that light, since education. The Ministry of Education will be a partner. But let me just say this though. I'm not going to speak for every organization, but I think that as an NGO who focuses on education, it's automatically a partnership with the Liberian government. Because one of our main objectives is to help the Liberian government achieve the millennium goal, which is goal number two, achieving universal education. Right now, Liberia is behind the MDG, Liberia is behind. And so that's a partnership with Liberian government. But to specifically answer your question, we have been in touch with the Ministry of Education, and I will be very, very blunt. To some extent, I don't think that the Ministry of Education is interested in organizations who are doing great work in Liberia when it comes to education. This is the reason why. We have exhausted so much effort every year to form the kind of partnership directly with the Ministry of Education that needs to be formed. Okay, we have put forth great ideas. We have advocated for educational reform, and I know that that will happen on another level, legislatively. But we have done everything that we possibly could. We have visited the offices of the Ministry of Education, met with the appropriate individuals, and I just have not seen that same effort reciprocated from the ministry. And so our doors are still open, but I would say that we do have a partnership with the Liberian government. We have reached out to every Liberian, both at home and in the diaspora, and we have expressed to them our concerns when it comes to our Danish education system. Look, even the president of Liberia has expressed more than once that the system is damaged. So we know what the problem is. The question now is, why have we not done something to address the problem? Why is it that our kids are still in dilapidated schools, under-equipped schools? Why is it that we are expanding education, decentralizing education, when we have yet to equip schools that have already been built? Why is it that our teachers are being paid the lowest, while representatives are making close to $5,000, $5,000 to $10,000 a month? Look, our priorities seems to be misplaced, because education is the backbone of the prosperity of every nation, even the great United States of America. Look at China. The reason why China is prospered to be the greatest nation on earth in some areas, the world superpower, it's because they invested in education. They invested in technology. In Liberia today, we are behind. We've asked and we advocated that all of our schools be equipped with computers. Why is it we don't have computer education in Liberia today? So these are all questions and concerns that we have put forth to the education ministry. And they have all been falling on deaf ears.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. I hope things will work better for our country, because all of what you're saying are very true, because I can attest to all of that. If you want to be part of our discussion, you can call 888-463-6748. 888-463-6748. My next question to you, Robert, would be, what has, in what way, the Ebola virus epidemic in Liberia has affected your work in, your foundation work in Liberia?
Ebola has affected everything, right? Ebola has affected everything, and it's not funny. It's really not funny. It's actually pathetic. To see, and I was amazed when everything came to a standstill. To see one virus, and this is completely unprecedented, to see one virus stopped everything in an entire country shows that we have a lot of work to do. We, for years, have had a systemic problem. And there have been those who have pretend as if we have those systems in place. But, you know, Ebola has shown that we lack a lot. You know, I can't overemphasize how broken our healthcare system is that needs to be built. But Ebola has affected everything. Everything has been put on hold because of that. Let me just state one thing. I was so disappointed because I was supposed to be in Liberia by now, And we, even though our community learning center, which is our long goal, has not really gone the way we expected it to, but we were set to open up our mini library in the Rock Hill community. Currently, all of the materials necessary to do so are in storage, and we were supposed to ship them back home to provide our schools have some access to a library. That was not possible. We could not do that. We are hopeful that next year that will be done, because all of the materials we need, are already in storage. So that's just one area is affected. I talked to you about our girls leading our work conference. The conference was so successful, and our intention this year was to expand it. We had young girls who were ambassadors to go back to their schools and educate their peers on what they had learned and come back to us with recommendations in how we do selections this year. And this was a conference that I think the entire nation needs. We've reached out to the Ministry of Education to partner with them to see how we can expand this on a yearly basis to no avail. And we will continue to reach out to everyone. But that could not be possible this year because of Ebola. And most importantly, our schools are still closed. Our schools have been closed for 6 months. And that's unacceptable. Look, education has been on hold in our country for over 15 years. And most of the kids that I've met, over the past 4 years, they were born in the war. They don't have the foundation. They never sat in a classroom. Some of them are 14, 15. They never sat in a classroom because of war. So you can see how, bad the war affected our education and some of our bright future leaders. But those kids still have aspirations and inspirations to do so much better. And that's what we said, let's invest in education reform, let's invest in technical schools. Because even though they don't have the academic foundation, they can still be productive citizens in whatever trade that they are proficient in. They can still be great citizens in their area. We can't afford to wait any longer. We can't afford to have our kids out of school for another year or two. And so when we talked about how Ebola has affected our work, it has put everything on hold. And we have shifted, all of us have shifted our strategy to ensure that safety is key, to ensure that those mothers, our brothers and sisters in various communities who are suffering from Ebola gets the necessary equipment needed to ensure the hospitals who are lacking PPEs and other things that they need gets those equipment. Speaking of PPEs, we intend to ship two of our borrowers this year with equipment back home, which will benefit at least two communities, the Rock Hill community and another community that has been hit hard by Ebola. So we've shifted our strategy to Ebola. But I think it's time we get back to what we need to do. I think it's important that we continue the education. It's important that we continue the educational aspect of preventing the spread of Ebola and whatnot. I know we're going to get to that question about elections and Ebola, and I will address that, but it's affected us a lot. And I think it's time we get back to it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Robert. We're going to take another break. We'll be back with more of our discussion on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back to the International View on TalkZone.com. Here again, Fanta Chroma.
Welcome back, beautiful listeners. You are listening to the International View on TalkZone.com. We are discussing understanding the work of Me1 C2 Leofo Foundation Incorporated. Robert, before we go into our next question, I want you to please tell, let's say, give our listening audience, let them know your site and tell them where they can go to donate on your website if they want to be great help to your foundation.
Please, and I think all of whatever you have, you know, the $1, $2, $5, $20, $100, $1,000, $10,000, $100,000, whatever you have, I think it makes a difference. It makes a huge difference in a child's life, and that's very, very important. And so if you are interested in donating, just go on our website. Again, it's www.me1c2lilfocfund.org. So again, it's www.me1c2lilfocfund.org. And just go to donate, and you'll be able to make a donation.
Okay, thank you very much. My next question to you will be, what is your view on holding of senatorial election during this Ebola period?
Well, I've had mixed feelings when it comes to that. Initially, I was one of those who called for the suspension of elections until Ebola was under some control. And let me be very clear, some control. And that was early in I think June or so. When the outbreak started spreading as initially, and we called for suspension of elections then, and so as time went by, when things started to come under some control, with the help of the international community and other nations, we decided to. You know, things started to get back normal. And what I think, this is my personal opinion on elections now as it stands. I have no issue with, the holding of elections, as it stands. I would have hoped that the people responsible for conducting elections will have in place some preemptive measures to ensure that Ebola is not spread. When you have a group of people all together and understanding the transmission of Ebola, I think it's important that people understand, even though the number of suspected cases has decreased, it's also important to also note that Ebola is still real. And so when I see on the internet and social media, how people are campaigning, with as if Ebola is not even around or it wasn't around, you know, a few months ago and like people are not dying from it or it's not real, it worries and bothers me. But my main contention with elections being held as it stands is the fact that our school doors are still closed. I have a serious problem with that. I have a serious problem with that. And some have argued that the risk at schools is more than that of people campaigning. I disagree strongly. The logic just does not, it doesn't make sense to me. Because in our classroom, as congested as they are, there are measures you can put in place to ensure safety. And I think that it's more dangerous when people are gathered together, especially the people who did not even believe that Ebola, and some people who still don't believe that Ebola is real, are moving around and interacting with people that they don't know. They don't know where they've been. They don't know who they've been around. And as if nothing, you know, has happened. I think it encourages the spread of Ebola. And I think that there has to be some measures in place to control the interaction of people. So my main issue is, if the people responsible to ensure the safety of Liberians think it's okay to conduct elections now, without the experts declaring Liberia Ebola free? Why is it that those same leaders who would be responsible to make the same decisions a year from now, why is it that they are not putting in place some policies to ensure safety now and open our schools? I spoke to a student in Liberia a few weeks ago, and she said to me, Robert, everything seems to be moving on normal in this country, with the exception of our education. I think it's wrong. It is imperative that we open school right now. And I'm not just talking. I have some suggestions. I've proposed some suggestions. I think the Ministry of Education, in collaboration with school administrators, need to draft a new policy that focuses on ensuring the safety of our kids while they are in school. One thing I think we can do is this. We can reduce our overly congested classroom. Right now we have too many kids in one classroom. And because of that, even before Ebola, you don't have that personal interaction with students and teachers. We need to reduce that right now. Instead of having 100 kids in a small classroom where there are no desks, no chairs, let's reduce that. And what that does is it enables students to have a space by themselves. We can do that. There needs to be a policy drafted that don't necessarily restrict our socialization at school, but guide on-campus socializing, which means we have to sacrifice our playing during recess and how we play, how we greet our fellow classmates and teachers. There also needs to be a special training with instructors on the prevention of Ebola, okay, so that those education, Ebola educations, are carried on in schools where teachers inform students before students enter class and while students are in class during these periods that Ebola is real, and these are the measures that you need to continue to take while you're in school to ensure your safety. What we could also do is ensure hand washing in between every class period. Every class period, both teachers and students wash their hands. And we could do that. We could do that to ensure safety in our schools right now. We could also provide desks. The kids are sitting on the floor in some of these schools in Liberia. It's ridiculous. And so these are common sense measures we can put in place to ensure safety. If safety is priority, and I'm too is concerned about safety, but we create safety. No one will create safety for us but ourselves. And the experts that they are waiting for to declare Liberia Ebola free might take another year, might take another year or two. And so are we willing to allow kids to be home, and some are suggesting homeschool? I tell you, about 57% of Liberians do not have the privilege to homeschool. There are organizations who are passing around books and whatnot. Even with that, who's going to homeschool the kids? The parents themselves are illiterate. They can't even do homework when school is open. So how are you expecting them to homeschool kids right now? They can't do that. Some parents can't afford to buy books. There are no libraries. And so, you know, there's no food. So what time do you have for kids to actually homeschool? The only chance some kids have for getting an education is in the classroom. And I think it is our responsibility. It is incumbent upon us to ensure that every safety measures are taken for our kids to go back to school. And so we are just following everything. If elections, it's okay to host election now, I think it's okay to open schools. But there must first be guidelines in place to ensure the safety of both administrators and students.
That's good. What plan does your foundation has in place for children that lost their parents to the Ebola epidemic in Liberia?
Well, we've already started strategizing to address that. And again, funding will play a huge part. Right now, we have kids who are without parents. It's going to be tough. It's already tough. As a guy who, you know, it's just so sad. But we have to do something about it. And what my foundation has started doing already is to, first of all, visiting those communities where Ebola has hit the hardest. to identify kids who have been, left without parents. And what we're going to have to start doing right now, look, we won't be able to help everyone. I wish we could. I wish we had the funds necessary to do so. But one thing I can tell you that we're going to start doing immediately, effectively, is to start identifying those communities hit the hardest, speaking to family members who know children who have been abandoned, who have been put in orphanages, and we will try our best to see how we can help them. There are no ways we can adopt these kids, but if, for instance, a mother or father passed away from Ebola, and now the auntie or extended family member has to take that child in, that adds another burden economically on that family. And so what we can do, instead of that family worrying about sending five or six or seven kids to school, we can say, well, you know what, we'll take three, because we have to go to the other families to take two. We have to go to the other families to take three. And so that's how we lessen the burden on those families. Back in 2011, we got a call from Liberia before Ebola. We got a call from Liberia about a blind couple who had just had a baby, and they had been sending their two girls to school. Because of the baby that were added to the family, all of the finances went to that baby, taking care of that baby. And so the two girls needed to be in school. And so what we did, we sent our team back into the village, into the little town they was in, and they have been under our scholarship right now. And so I think we have done a great job in identifying parents who are in need because of whatever situation, and lessening the burden, the financial burden on them, such as paying tuition, getting school utensils and whatnot. And we will continue that mission to ensure that all of those kids who lost parents to Ebola are not left in the streets of Monrovia, or are not left by themselves. We will help them.
Okay. Thank you very much, Robert, for having you on my show today. I'm very happy, and I hope to have you on another time.
Definitely. It's a privilege to be on. I thank you for what you do. I thank you for the invitation extended to me on behalf of myself, on behalf of our team in Liberia, on behalf of our board members. We extend our heartfelt appreciation to you for having us on and just giving us the opportunity to share our story and letting your listeners hear us out. It is our hope that they help us in the best way possible, whatever help they can extend to us, because they are all necessary. And thanks to your listener for listening to our show. Hopefully I'm on before next year. We are preparing for our fourth annual fundraiser gala, which is June, and I've already extended the invitation to you, and I'm hoping to see you out here in Atlanta for that. So again, thank you, and it was a privilege being on your show.
Thank you. You're welcome. I will sure to be there. If you want to donate to the foundation, Robert's foundation, you can go on the International View page on talkzone.com. There's a link to his website. Okay, beautiful listener, this is all we have time for today. Thanks for listening to the International View. Happy holidays. See you in 2015 with more discussion on the International View on talkzone.com.